time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you are listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors.
Good morning to all our listeners out there, Patrick. And I thought it was relevant this week that it's a very exciting week this week. And our producer, Joel Brooks.
Massive. We're a few days into this.
We are a few days in it. It happened on Wednesday. Started off with Melbourne versus the Dogs, which was very exciting. Grand final replay. Now, I've got a few questions for you on behalf of the footy season. You're playing this afternoon, 2 o'clock.
Yes.
Against Essendon, am I correct?
Correct.
It is. Now, before you get underway, I'm going to get you in a little bit of trouble.
Just a really well-organised cat supporter you are.
I asked you during the week. You had to fill me in. I said, the home game at the MCG, I wasn't too happy with that. I was going to come down to the old GMHBA. Patrick, the season is fast approached us. That doesn't make sense, but it's worked.
It does. It has fast approaches. Correct.
Now, first of all, I want to know how you're feeling, how the body is. You had a bit of an injury-prone year last year with your ankle and your hand and whatnot.
Well, you know, sometimes you have those years. You know, from a sporting perspective, it's like one thing this leads to the next. So, syndesmosis injury, so sort of ankle surgery.
Yep.
And because you have surgery on one part of your body, it's almost like as soon as you've been in a system for a long period of time, you're sort of well-tuned. So as soon as you have this first period of time where you're injured for the first time properly and you don't do anything for 4 weeks, other parts of your body start to sort of shut down.
Yeah, I've had this drama with my heart. Everything else just shuts down around me.
Look, that's probably... Okay, you've got me there. But, you know, so the next, you know, you get a little soreness in Achilles, in your calf. So
yep.
It was sort of one of those years.
Glad it finished.
And I've been fortunate enough where I haven't had too many of those years. But the season has approached us quickly, Redmond. It's going to be fascinating to see the Western Australian border and COVID implications because of the fact that every other state's been...
I'll sum it up. It's a pain in the backside how WA have approached this.
Well, it's not a pain in the backside, but most of those teams just haven't had players get COVID, which is a good thing, one. But what it means now is, and West Coast have had a few injuries, it means when they evidently do get exposed to COVID,
yes,
you get it, and all of a sudden, West Coast this week, they've only had like 25 or 26 players to pick from. So it could have really significant implications for both the Western Australian sides because they haven't had, like the rest of the competition, 80%+ of your list get COVID and therefore be less susceptible to getting the virus. So that's a really big watch this space over in the West because those teams just haven't been haven't been open to it.
Now, I'm going to answer my question. You are absolutely firing for the season. You're very fit, strong, ready to go. Had a few of the boys fill me in. They reckon you're well and truly ready to go, which is exciting for the Cats fans. But give us your top four. Now, we'll keep the Cats out of it. How do you think the Cats are going to go? There's been a bit of...
Well, there always is about Geelong. Everyone's oh, Dad's army. You're too old.
I caught up with you at the Cats during the week, and I think half the blokes had wheelchairs. But
Aaron, they're walking frames.
Sorry, the frames.
There's a difference between not being able to...
I can't talk. I couldn't walk from the car to the entrance.
No, I think the like any year, the teams that have great availability will have good success.
Yep.
So fitness is half the battle. You get good availability to your list and it goes a long way. Now, Melbourne are going to be very difficult to beat. Obviously, they won the grand final last season, but you look across the board, they're a really well-balanced side. They've got a
Petrarca, really, Oliver.
Yeah, brilliant midfield. That's clearly their strength, but they've got great intercept defenders and their forward line's only improved. So they're going to be difficult to beat. Richmond, I think, are going to be at the pointy end of the ladder once again. It's interesting listening to some of the sort of sports journos and reporters around.
The so-called experts.
Well, no, they're not. They report on the game. I'd question whether they're all experts, but they give their views on the season. Like, Richmond for mine are going to be very, very good.
Yeah, right. So I didn't expect that one.
They're definitely a watch this space.
Doggies?
Doggies will be very good. Like, they're so well balanced across their entire list. And there's going to be patience with some of their players. Like, you know, they're probably one of the biggest challenges in the competition, because they're probably going to be better next year and the year after with some of the players that have got number one draft picks and the like that aren't necessarily, you know, AFL ready now. Jamar, a great example of that. But he'll only get better. He'll get some game time, no doubt, this year. But they're led by, you know, one of the best players in the competition in Marcus Bontempelli. So they'll be up there. Brisbane, once again, injury raveled a bit last season. They lose Lachie Neale and a few others. So that sort of interrupts the flow that they have in their game. But they'll be very good. I suspect Fremantle will be better again. That'll be a very difficult game to win over there against them whenever you play them there. They're hard enough to play there in recent years where they haven't had the, you know, the quality of players that they've got this year. So I think they're going to be, you know, they'll certainly be a top eight fancy, you know, Carlton another. But, you know, we'll get a better idea after the first four rounds, yep. Redmond, on where the AFL season is going to sit itself.
Who do you think's not quite there? Bottom sort of few. Who do you think you might be down that way?
Well, I think the teams that will always struggle are the ones that have taken it upon themselves to go, we're rebuilding in a sense. You know,
like North Melbourne rebuilding for the last 16 years.
No, they're certainly not that. But they've been up front and said, we're building towards a premiership, but, you know, it's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen this year. But we're putting the building blocks in place. And if you haven't seen Francis player, James Horton Francis, holy crap, that kid is unbelievable. So, you know, there'll be a building year for North, but what I will say about them, they have a phenomenal coach in David Noble. So, you know, build it and they will come.
Last footy question, who's going to be, I guess, the player to watch out for that's not been the player to watch out? Who's going to really stand up this year that we've sort of heard of but not quite heard of?
Well, I think the one that for me, I think of straight away.
There's big raps on Dacos and things like that. Are they going to come in impact or is there someone ahead of that?
No, I'm talking players that have been
in the system a bit.
In the system for a while and have even been all Australian, but I suspect will only even improve. Jacob Hopper for me from GWS.
Oh, yeah.
He's somewhat overshadowed by the polish of Kelly, the goal kicking of Toby Green, but he for me, you know, is ready to stamp his authority on the league in general. And, you know, I could very much see him being well and truly in the top 10 in the game, you know, come season's end.
It's enough about footy. It's nearly done me for the season, to be honest with you. But very good insight to the season ahead, 2022. Now, one thing that I want to ask you and have a bit of a discussion about, and it's something that it affects me a hell of a lot, this, is just the servicing on engines, any outboard. I'm not in particular Mercury, Suzuki, nothing in particular. Now,
we've had a lot of questions sent to our socials around, do I have to stick to the regimented servicing of outboards? It seems ridiculous. And we were talking about it during the week, and it sort of hit a nerve with us because you went straight away, oh, I think this all the time.
Look, this is the biggest pain in the backside. Now, once again, this is not having a dig at any manufacturer at all.
This is the same.
It's all the same, and all the marine dealerships are the same. Now, I do want to mention one thing. Evinrude E-Tech, I know they're not really around as such anymore.
No, Aaron, they're not.
I was trying to do it politely for anyone that had an E-Tech. They're not around anymore. But they tried to bring out a three-year servicing scheme into the game where you didn't have to get it serviced. I can't remember exactly what the hours were, but for someone like me, I use my engine a lot.
I'm coming back to the fact that you are complaining about how much servicing that you have to do.
Yep.
Then you mentioned Evinrude E-Tech. They don't have to have servicing for 3 years or three. It was 300 hours.
300 hours, was it?
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, champ, but that outboard manufacturer no longer exists.
So this discussion's just been shut down?
what are you trying?
Oh, no, I just want to give an example. As a charter boat operator, not myself, but just for example, Chris Vasileski, Gone Fishing Charters, Crossy, every 100 hours, they've got to get a service. Now, for me, someone that fishes every single day that has bluefin tuna outside of their heads, I do a, we'll say just over half day. I know how we say half day is fishing, which is 6 hours, but 12 hours. But it's half days fishing. We'll go with 6 hours. So say 6 to 10 hours on the water chasing bluefin. And naturally, yes, you do. You always push out longer than you think.
So you've got 10 hours in one day on your motors.
Now, Chris O does a 6 hour tuna charter on a Saturday morning, 6 hour in the afternoon. He's done 12.
Yep.
12 hours of his engine hours for an upcoming 100 hour service.
Yes.
So he does less than 10 trips of charters, and he has to pay onwards two engines of $2,000 to have his engine serviced. Is there somewhere in between that needs to be, like, I guess, surely by using the engine for those hours, they haven't compromised the, I guess, the output of that engine. Surely there has to be something to come into play. And someone like me, I've done nearly 700 hours in my engine, less than Chris, but I've done quite a few. And it cost me up to $1,000 to get my engine serviced.
But
it's a regular, like, it's quite a regular thing.
So yes, I understand that. But you're also, you're operating an engine in the harshest environment imaginable, in salt water. So clearly, manufacturers, they all look at it in the same way. What can we offer that stretches it out as far as it can without us having ongoing issues? Because the last thing that manufacturers want is outboards coming back continuously because they're unable to cope with.
I get what you're saying there, but what about if I put it into an example of, say you, your engine, you're not going to probably do 100 hours for a period of time. So you're going to do 100 hours, say, in 6 months, say, just example, and you're going to get it in 6 months' time, but it's done, it's actually sat in, like, it's sat, like, it, where mine's being used and it's processed that salt water.
Yeah, yep.
100 hours isn't a lot of hours for me.
There might be people
this is a discussion. It's not a dig, it's a discussion.
No, I reckon there's people that, quite clearly, there is people that will have, it'll take them 2 years to do 100 hours.
But they've got to get their yearly service then.
Yes.
So that's a yearly service comes into play before the 100 hours. So even if you only do 40 hours, you still got to get your yearly service to maintain that warranty if you have a new engine.
And a year comes around very quickly.
It does.
Like,
so I don't know, like, is it, well, just to, I had my actual car serviced only last week or the week before. I think it only cost me $340. And it got my whole car, Volkswagen Amarok, got it serviced, and it was, I think it was 30,000 to 45,000, so 15,000 Ks.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of kilometres on the road. Like, that's getting hammered every single day, towing boats, driving. But because I'm towing boats, it's no different to you driving from Moggs to the Cattery every day for work, except mine's getting hammered, but I've still got the same service hours.
Do you think that outboard manufacturers should offer fixed price servicing?
That's a good one. Well, I'm currently buying a car for Kari at the moment, a new car, and we're looking at the Mitsubishi Outlander. And one of the things that are in play are fixed servicing for 5 years.
Makes a big difference, doesn't it?
And we've looked at it, gone, so anything that happens after that price, you don't have to pay for.
The same thing with warranty, when you look at new car warranties. Engine warranties.
Yeah, engine.
A great example. Well,
I don't know.
There is no stress. If something goes wrong, okay, yes, annoyance. And at the moment, it's a real annoyance because you don't have, you know, the outboard availability is a nightmare globally. But at least you know it's under warranty.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm not going to be hit with a $10,000,
rebuild of the engine if something goes wrong.
Exactly. It's under warranty. Like, that's the beauty of buying new. That's the beauty of not looking at, you know, secondhand outboards that are 15 years old. And yeah, absolutely. What you know, sits in this is cost and availability. But if you can't afford it, that's the beauty of warranty.
Well, send it in what you think. If you think that if you use your boat repetitively, so say, for example, a charter, should it be 100 hours or can they stretch it to, say, 250 to bring that instead of to 250 hours, which instead of being done in, say, 8 days, Pat, to 12 days, which is, don't get me wrong, it is 100%. The boys are doing this at times with these tuna out the front of their heads.
Absolutely.
What about marlin fishers up the east coast of New South Wales, tuna out of Port Lincoln, whatnot? All these charter boat guys, $2,000, because to be outside of in open ocean, you've got to have two engines on your boat. That's part of the rules and regulations. So an average service is around that 1,000, give or take, either side of it, depending on horsepower. We'll just go with 1,000. And
doesn't get you much anymore, does it?
No, that's why. And I'm like, it's no dig here. There was a good discussion, and let us know what you think.
We've got a massive show of Real Adventures coming your way this morning. We're catching up with Shane Mensforth from SA Angler, our great mates in South Australia. So
SA anglers, make sure you listen in for that. Strain's actually out on the water, so we're going to get a live report from him and what to look forward to throughout the year from South Australian Angler. All that and more this morning on Real Adventures.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Let's find out what's been happening in your part of the country. But before we do that, we're going to head to your week in fishing. Redmond, you've been hitting the tuna. There's been plenty of reports that they've been difficult to capture, difficult to chase. You haven't found that, though, if you're patient and if you're...
Do the right things.
Yeah, if you're matching the hatch.
I had the long weekend off the tuna as such. You might have seen if you followed social media. I went out and took my little man out, which the first time in ages I've had him out in the water. I've been a bit crook, as you know. And
you let him pick up and release
a wild great white.
A gummy shark. It was one of the funniest things that I've ever seen. You've got this little, how old's Finn?
He's nearly two in April.
Holding this foot and a half gummy shark that it's thrashing everywhere, and he's wheeling it around trying to throw it over the side of the boat. It was fantastic.
I'm allowed to say this, aren't I? My kid's an idiot. He just has no...
No, he
has no fear of anything. Every time something come in the boat, we had little Port Jacksons. Port Jacksons have got spikes on the back of their dorsal fin and its anal fin. I'm like... the back fin, and I'm going to him, mate, he comes up to me and goes, hold. I'm like, oh, maybe not this one, mate. Maybe not this one. Here's a banjo. You can hold a banjo. It can't hurt you.
Wait till he picks up a gurnard. I'll tell you what, he won't be picking up a gurnard.
Hopefully it puts a bit of fear into him because it was great to see. But I took him out on the water and we had a beautiful day. It was Sunday. Beautiful day. It was probably one of the last summer days, let's put it that way.
And great opportunity to get kids out on the water without hating the day because either the wind's picked up and it's really cold or the swell's pumping in.
He was in a t-shirt and shorts the whole time, had his life jacket on. Mum and dad come out with us as well and they had a ball just watching Finn play around. But we managed that. Just to give you an example of how we managed it with Finn, was I went fishing first. So he knows what whiting are because we'd catch a lot of them. So I said, whiting first, we go catch whiting.
Not all of us, mate. But
So we went and got some. We actually didn't do that well on the fish. We got a few whiting and I just put them. I actually took my big silver cray pot. It's a big pot on the boat. And I actually put it upside down for him to stand on. Usually, that's it. And it's balanced out. He can't fall. It's too high to fall over the sides.
Yep.
But he can see over the sides and the snapper rack holds him in really well. But in the end, I filled the whole thing up with water, chucked a whiting in there for him to play with, and I just like him getting the touch and feel of the fish, and he's playing with them, they're kicking, he's laughing. He didn't really care what was going on with the rod side of things, but it was more about being time on the water. So we did that. He got a little bit bored of it after a time, so we went and changed it up. We went and got a few squid, which he loves squids. For some reason, he can't say squid. He calls them a taquoc. I got no idea why. So we got a few squid, but to finish the day on a positive note, Pat, excuse me, we went at the end of the day to see the seals. So it was about finishing on like something super exciting. So we went to the seals at Chinaman's Hut in Port Phillip Bay, and as soon as we got home, he runs inside and Curry goes, "Oh, what did you see today?" And straight away, seals. So like he remembers that. So next time we go on a boat, once again, it's going to be a positive. Yeah. So those seals will happen again at the end, and that's how we'll sort of generate the nice day for the kids. And it's just about keeping them entertained, as we always speak about. And we are fast approaching school holidays. So if you are heading out wherever you are, try and approach the day that way.
I think we're a couple of weeks away from school holidays,
which we'll have more on the show about how to approach the school holidays in a couple of weeks. But it's just something taking him out was amazing. And few tuna, like you said, offshore, pricks to catch because of that full moon.
So how are you approaching them around that full moon?
Early morning was the key for me.
Yep.
I knew they'd bite first thing. So as soon as the sun come up, you had a bite time, they were going to bite for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Which was different to a month ago when we were talking about...
Even 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, bite time being 10 o'clock onwards.
Yep.
So that's why it pays to listen to this show.
My salt guide report literally this week was exactly dot pointed what I've just said to you. It was fish early. You'll get fish early.
Yep.
They'll go to crap by 9 o'clock. You will not catch... You'll see them sunning themselves. Which is exactly what they did for me, and they did it on the weekend.
And are we talking banger teaser bars, or are you?
Yeah, teaser bars.
Plastics?
It was about really firing out, and the soft plastics. To be honest with you, I reckon the teaser bars outfished the soft plastics just because of the commotion on the sunning fish. Like once again, it really sparked them up.
Yep.
It was the teaser bars doing the thing. We ran two lures without teaser bars. They didn't get a fish.
Yeah.
But the two teaser bars got fish and the two plastic got a few fish. But it was about creating commotion on the surface and getting that reaction bite once again. Even in first thing in the morning, the teaser bars still went the best. Now, as soon as 9:30 came, we just got off the water. We knew we weren't going to get another fish. But in the report, I stated that in the afternoon, on that bigger tide, they'll go again. Yep. Sure enough, I had mates that went out in the afternoon. The fish weren't sunny. They were actually feeding on the surface on that bigger tide in the afternoon. And that was like late in the afternoon, 4 o'clock onwards. Like it was quite late.
Yep.
But once again, you're not wasting your day getting up at 8:30, 9 o'clock, missing that bite, fishing from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock like a lot of people do, coming in with nothing.
And being like, how I have fished all day.
For nothing.
And not caught a thing.
You literally could have went out for 2 hours, had the best time. You could have gone back in the bay, got some squid, got some whiting, and you could have done what you wanted. So fishing is a luck at certain times, but a lot of luck you can create yourself by being there at the right times. And we give it to you on the show and as well as Soul Guide, so...
You mentioned that the whiting have been a little tougher to catch.
Once again, moon.
Yep.
Yep, just that moon. Slow tides. That afternoon tide was the better tide. Fish that, you'll get more fish. It won't be crazy. Someone might get crazy session, don't get me wrong.
You're still pinning your squid tails, essentially.
Yep.
And then you're mixing up your baits at all? Or not?
Just pippies on top.
Yep.
Oh, sorry, pippy on first and then squid on top.
Yep.
Burley, if you don't, you'll get, on the moons, you'll get 6, 8, 7 fish, 3 fish. If they stop biting, don't try and get them back with burley as such. Always burley.
Yep.
But move 10 meters. Just small moves.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Yep, just keep active and that'll fire them up. And once again, we're off this moon we're off it now, I think. I think it was yesterday or the day before. So we're going to see things really increase this week into next week. And then the new moon comes. New moon's not as bad as the full, but it does play a role. And once again, follow your tides, those bigger tides. It's when the fish are going to feed. And then when you're off the moon on those super big tides, when they're super strong, fish the slightly slower tides. So it's about learning the balance of the tides of when the fish are going to feed. Movement is the key to fishing.
Yep. All right, let's find out what is biting in your part of the country. We're starting in New South Wales. The marlin fishing has gone nuts on the southeast coast of New South Wales. Even in the rain... The fish is still humming, which is quite extraordinary in itself, Redmond, because quite often when we talk about fishing and we'll talk about Queensland and the Brisbane region, which is it's closed at the moment. You can't even fish the Brisbane River, so it's just not worth it. But quite extraordinary to see the marlin go nuts.
I couldn't believe it. I literally had people going up there and messaging me, and I said, I think the water will be pretty good on the shelf. It was shocking. I was completely wrong. Yes. I was literally completely wrong. I thought it was going to be reasonable.
Yep.
It was bad. But fish in it, Pat. They had a lot of fish in it. Multiple, like eight. Some people got 8, 10 fish in a day fishing off that Tathra sort of Marimbula area right up to Bermagui. Trapman Bermagui, who we like to follow on the show, he had some fantastic vision of how bad the water was out of the 12 mile and whatnot. So... I got no answer for it other than the fact that it went really, really good.
There's a few kings being caught in Botany Bay as well, which is quite surprising once again, given the floodwaters around. The dolphin fish wide of Port Stephens have been pretty consistent once again, considering the conditions. And certainly be careful, Redmond, there's certain ramps after the flooding. There's been a bit of displacement around some of the infrastructure around there, which
Colonel Boat Ramp. Colonel Boat Ramp is just a good example. It's not usable. You just cannot physically use that ramp. It is stuffed at the minute. So until they get that underway, and don't be too crucial on the council because they've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Like it's not just a 10-minute fix. So they've got a lot of work to do. South Australia, Pat?
Yeah, Samson Fish and the Kings running hot. Greenlee Islands area. We're going to chat to Shane Mensforth in the next segment, so we'll get a live report of how it's fishing literally this morning. Port Lincoln has seen some seriously good sand whiting on offer and on little poppers, Redmond, which is a really exciting way to chase whiting. So,
well, Shane's a prime example. That's one of his favourite things to do, Shane. He loves his poppers more than ever, casting them on the flats there. And we'll bring that up as a topic to talk to him about how to actually approach the sand whiting on the flats.
There's lots of big bronzies as well, which is pretty interesting. Doesn't surprise us given the fact that there's been plenty of big bluefin tuna. Once they're firing, the big sharks tend to follow it in Queensland, Redmond.
Yeah, fishing tweed, literally the water's been horrible up there, but once again, there's certain species that will feed well in that. The brim are fed really well off the surf, same as the yellowfin whiting, and cured worms doing most of the damage. The Sunshine Coast, big blacks out wide, big black marlin, they're going really, really well. And the Lake Kalita treat. Now, I don't know if you saw this photo of the barramundi during the week, Pat. I probably should have sent it to you, but...
Huge.
Good photography work because it was a big fish. It was 121 centimetres, which is ginormous.
It looked like half the size of the boat.
It looked like a whale that he put in the boat the way that... like. And don't get me wrong, it was an older gentleman. I don't expect him to be holding up above his head. Trust me, I'm the first to disappear when it's hard work. So it was in front of him. It looked like it was 3 metres long. So it was, an incredibly big fish. WA, some huge diamond trevally landed out of Exmouth and the snapper bite. I'm calling it, Pat. I'm letting you have your little bit of glory here. I'm calling the snapper capital at the minute, WA.
Yes.
Fremantle, yep. Just going stupid. Like, just fish to big fish. Like, you're not talking 3 to 5s. You're 5 to 8s. Like,
yep.
big snapper, and they're going mad. Tassie?
Yeah, Eagle Hawk having a great run, a school bluefin tuna as well. One of the sort of pinnacle fishing destinations in the country.
And just the bluefin recovery is incredible.
Yep.
Everywhere we're talking, like even WA had bluefin captures this week, right up to Mallacoota, like crazy.
Out the front of Bull Bay, there are some huge schools of oversized kings hanging around. There's a few birds casting them at them with micro jigs has been working. Well, it shows the water temperature still hasn't dropped off if there's good sort of king captures down there, Redmond.
Yeah, it's sort of stabilised. Like we've had a bit of rain, but our weather hasn't been cold. I'm in t-shirt and shorts most days, and I don't live in Tassie, but I'm tipping that they have pretty similar weather to what we have. So it's just stability, and the longer we have stability for, the longer the fish will hang around. The flathead fishing, last one out of Henry Bay, drifting around, but once again, fish smart, rig on the bottom. Yep. Flathead live on the bottom, your rig's on the bottom, bit of squid, and away you go.
That is the whip around. We find out what's biting in your part of the country.
We got time for questions?
Yeah, we do, actually.
One question or two?
No, we do. Social Club, we take your questions from social media each and every week. Make sure you send them into our socials. We love to interact with those that enjoy the show. So Tim's got the first one, Redmond. Hi, guys. I'm keen to get my family into fishing. I fished growing up and loved fishing with Dad out in the boat. It'll be beach fishing for us to start, but what are your main generic tips for beach fishing, drifting for flathead? What am I looking for? Those sorts of things before moving into boating. So this is relevant because in a couple of weeks' time, school holidays winds up or kicks off. But what are you looking for when you're taking the family down for beach fishing? For those that haven't spent a lot of time beach fishing, what are the visual clues that we're looking for when we look out from the car park to an open ocean?
Well, we spoke a little bit about the boat earlier, Pat, so we'll just stick straight to land-based here. Beach jetties, they're great places to take the kids, but you've got to be careful when you're fishing around them because you've got surf, not just surf, you've also got tide around a lot of jetties around the country. So kids fall in with tide, before you know it, they can be 30 metres from you in the matter of 5 to 10 seconds. That can be dangerous. So if you are fishing off the surf, you want to find gutters. Gutters are a place where it's deeper water and it's where the water tends to rush back out. It's like a rip. It tends to rush back out to the ocean.
And it won't necessarily be breaking in that spot.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it would just be that, look like that safest place to fish, safest place to swim as such, but it's actually the most dangerous. But the fish love it. Once again, we spoke at the top of the show, no flow, no go. It's a place where you'll get your salmon schooling in, you'll get your flathead, your pinkies, everything like that. And off the beach, if you can find a little bit of reef, structure as such, fish always live in structure, bait live on structure. So if you're fishing, say, for example, at the front of your place, Pat, at Moggs, you'll probably walk somewhere where you find a little bit of reef structure. And even if you go down, if you go during the morning on a low tide, work out where the reef is on the low tide, come back that afternoon on that high tide, and the water will be covering that reef, but there will be fish. You'll know exactly where to cast, where not to cast. So get up nice and high as well. If you've got a nice dune, you can look down on the water. You'll be able to see those gutters easier, and that's where the fish are going to live.
Talking about sort of shallow water inhabited by smaller fish, deeper water, bigger fish. So as that tide comes in, those bigger fish start to come into those shallows as the water increases, they start to chase each other. Are you preferring to fish off the beach on the incoming tide or the outgoing tide? Is it much of a difference?
Yeah, to be honest with you, outgoing tide. I know I just said incoming because you can see visually and it helps. Salmon and that won't make a difference. Salmon is fine. But targeting big gummies, bronzies and schoolies and snapper off the beach, for me, it's about going into dark. And if you can get the outgoing tide, I don't know what it is, but it's definitely the end of the outgoing, start of the incoming, that
is
change.
Is it anything to do with those fish being in that shallow water column? All of a sudden, the tide's going out. All right, those fish have got nowhere else to go but out to sea or deeper water.
Don't know. I generally don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. It's just something that's been...
the most success?
It's definitely... And I used to... Don't get me wrong. Don't think I just boat fish. I used to fish the beach all the time as a kid. If Dad couldn't take me out in the boat, I was down surf fishing because we live Ocean Grove, not too far from the beach. We used to ride our bikes and surf fish down there. And definitely, like, our big gummies and schoolies, 100%. Outgoing, end of the outgoing tide to the start of the incoming tide. One more question or we pushed our luck?
Nah, we're out of time.
Sorry, Graham, we'll get you next week.
Shane Monforth joins us after the break. This is Real Adventures.
Gearing up for Dometic. Dometic Patrol, an icebox with a sense of adventure. Everything you need for adventures, big or small. Mobile living made easy. Dometic.
Time for gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic. Shane Monforth is SA Angler. He joins us this morning. Good morning, Shane.
Morning, gentlemen. How are we?
Going not too bad, Shane. Thanks for joining us. Now, I know Patrick's going to talk to you a little bit about the SA Angler magazine and what's coming up in the next month and in this edition. But I'm going to throw in a cheeky question because I mentioned it at the start of the show. I've seen some great reports of the sand whiting around the flats at the moment, and you've been sharing them on your social media platforms. Can you take us through the popping technique and what to look for and how to approach the sand whiting in the shallows?
All right, well, look, tides are important. I like to fish the run-in tide, get there probably half an hour after low tide and then fish the run-in as the water comes up over the flat.
Yep.
Obviously, the fish are coming in with the water looking for something to eat. Like to fish with some weed and sand, not just a big expanse of sand, but like cover. And we tuck our lures along the edges of the weed beds. And a lot of times the fish are coming out of the weed. Fishing in, the ideal depth is sort of knee to thigh depth, I guess, probably, 70 centimetres of water is perfect.
Yep.
And prospect every area, just stand in one spot and just fire cast, 24 hours around the clock sort of thing until you find a fish. And if you're in the right place at the right time, it doesn't take too long.
Shane, does it... Like, I think I've spoken to you one other time. I've been up along the New South Wales coast and seen lots of those whiting in the shallows. Is it a visual thing as well? Like, are you seeing the schools of fish or are you actually more targeting the areas of where that you think they'll be?
Yeah, more targeting the areas, mate. Occasionally you see some fish flashing, which is obviously a school. Casting over them occasionally gets fish, but we found that the ones we cast at don't seem to be all that interested. It's the ones that are feeding around the edges of weed beds and little rocky shelves are the ones that they're the ones that are after the lure. And so 90% of the fish we catch get that way.
And when you said lure, what's your go-to sort of poppers? Like, what size are we using?
If you can find some of Butchie's stiffy poppers, they've been around for a while now and they don't make them anymore. Anyone can find some of those, they are the best. There's no doubt about it there.
Bushy stiffy popper. You can't find it anymore, Patrick. We might leave the sand whiting on that note. Take it away.
Now, Shane, in the current edition of SA Angler, the front cover features a beautiful bronze whaler and it's about fishing for them in the surf off the beach. Can you talk us through what you've covered in the magazine and why it's a great one to pop into your local service station or news agent and pick up a copy?
Well, actually, that came to us via a Facebook message from the girl who caught the shark, and she said, "Well, have a look on her YouTube page. You'll see this, and if you're interested, I'll write you a story." So she did. Her name is Charity Selleck, as in Tom Selleck. They were sight casting these big whaler sharks that are herding the salmon up against the shore. They're catching a salmon, a 3-kilo salmon, putting it on live, letting it swim back out to the school and hooking up. And they're really big fish. The one on the cover is about 200 kilos. That's a pretty big bronze.
Yeah, and they're great to catch and release, but Redmond, they're one of your favourites and my favourites to eat as well. They're a beautiful tasting shark.
Beautiful eating shark. Now, Shane, just on the topic of the big bronzies, are you finding with the tuna coming back in the numbers, like they're getting thicker and thicker every year, right from South Australia, WA, right down to Mallacoota, and even in Tasmania at the moment. Are you finding that the bronzies are definitely getting more prominent? Like prevalent?
Look, they've been a real problem at Victor Harbour this year, you know, south coast, south of Adelaide. Just about every boat, every day reports that they're losing one or two or more fish to bronzies. And they're big ones. Some of them, taking 15, 16 kilo bites off these tuna. And these are big sharks. These are 10, 11 footers. And I think they're waking up to the fact that the tuna are in the area, and the ones that are on the line are a lot easier to tackle than the ones that are free swimming. So, it's becoming a bit of a problem. So, you hate putting up tuna heads. It's just a big waste of fish.
Now, Shane, the first southern bluefin tuna that I ever caught was out fishing with you off Victor Harbour. For those that have always thought about it but have been a bit nervous too, or for whatever reason haven't been willing to chase southern bluefin tuna and the school tuna, Victor Harbour at the moment, fishing really, really well.
It's probably had its best year, Paddy, since you and I fished together a few years ago. It's probably back to those levels. We had a couple of slightly quieter years, but this year's been full on. And they're still there. It's getting into autumn now, and they're still there. And most of the charter boats are catching the quota every day, and so are the recce's still launching at Victor Harbour and Cape Jervis. It's been a phenomenal year. Really, really has.
Now, one of the things we always love to do when we talk to you, Shane, a little update on the boat. You've been running a centre console bar crusher for, it must be close on 200 bit years now.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
In a colder climate, yes, absolutely, South Australia can get nice and warm in summer. How have you found it, though, managing the boat when it does get to winter? Because that's sort of one of the big considerations for anglers when they think about a centre console being wonderful for in good weather, but can be tougher in those colder climates.
I've got a couple of special clears that I've had made that clip onto the side of the console and go down onto the gunwale.
Yep.
And it stops all the spray from coming back behind the console. And yeah, you're right. When it's cold in August, July, August is really cold, and it's important to keep it out. So I've had those made, and since then, mate, no drops come back, and I just love this boat. I just adore it. It's a wonderful thing.
Shane, thank you very much for your time this morning. We've been chatting with Shane Mensforth, who is, of course, South Australian angler. You can pick yourself up a copy now. As we spoke about earlier, there's a great article on these big bronzies in the surf. Shane, thanks for your time this morning.
Cheers, boys. Talk again later.
That was Gearing Up for Dometic Mobile Living Made Easy.
Red's review for Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance.
It's now time for Red's review for Club Marine, our product review of the week. And we've got Andrew Stephen on from Melbourne Marine for a couple of reasons, Redmond. He's going to go through some deals he's got for us this week at Melbourne Marine in their tackle segment. And you're going to quiz him about marine maintenance and why outboard dealers always have the same number of hours in servicing, because you're complaining about
it. I had to carry Andrew's wallet when he dropped it the other day and I couldn't lift it up.
Now, Andrew, good morning.
Good morning, Kat. Good morning, Aaron.
We're going to go straight into it. We've spoken off the top of the show why marine outboards, they're all the same when it comes to servicing. It's always 100 hours. Do you know if there's ever been discussion on lengthening that? Obviously, Evan Reed Etic did that. It didn't exactly go super well because they don't exist anymore as a manufacturer. Is it simply the marine environment is just that difficult to deal with and you need the constant upkeep and you need to keep an eye on what's happening?
I'll throw in just something quickly as well. So the discussion that we had was just an example. Your everyday angler, recreational angler or boating user heads out, 100-hour service or 1-year service. Now, you've got the likes of, I use charter boats as an example with the tuna fishery. They do 2 6-hour charters a day. They do 12 hours, all of a sudden 10 trips. They've wrapped up over 100 hours. Then it's $2,000 for a service. Has there ever been conversation with like the charter guys, people like, say, myself and whatnot, to maybe extend the hours or anything like that? And it's actually not at the dealership. It's not at any manufacturer. It's all the same wherever you go in the world. Has there ever been anything brought up in your neck of the woods?
I think from a recreational perspective, the engine brands sort of, nominate that 100-hour or once a year servicing. Just obviously the saltwater environment's quite harsh.
Yep.
And the recreational angler doesn't go over their boats as thoroughly, I guess, at times as what a commercial applicator may do. So obviously, if it's going back to a dealer once a year, they're getting the opportunity to have it checked out properly to make sure that they get the full benefits of the season ahead to use their boat, or whether it's, you know, during winter when it's not so busy as well for most of the dealerships, they can take their time and go through it properly. In terms of commercial guys, I know some brands will certainly look at it on a case-by-case scenario to give that opportunity to extend the hours. Guys are high users of commercial product. You know, they're racking the hours up quite quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think along the lines of Mercury and Suzuki and Yamaha, those guys, they tend to look at them in a case-by-case scenario. And if there's the flexibility there to be able to extend it for someone, I think they'll take it on board.
There you go, Randy.
That's the answer. There you go.
See, during the show, we've gone...
The new 600, though, as well. The new 600 that Mercury just released, that's got a 200-hour maintenance schedule.
Yeah, that'll last Aaron about 7 days, I
reckon. it'll make me fly.
Oh, but how good's that? We've gone from the start of the show, you've been questioning it.
It was just a discussion.
And half an hour in, we've got an answer from Andrew. Now, Andrew,
let's talk about the tackle sale.
We need some decent value for money here. What do you have for us this weekend? Or this week, right?
Yeah, so starting on the 24th of March, we're going to run a 25% off all fishing tackle sale upstairs in our shop. So I think it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, so 24th through to the 26th of March. There's 25% off store wide on all our fishing tackle.
And this isn't just a service station stop back where you see your King Neptune hook sitting on the side of the rack or anything like that. This is a tackle store. Like, I'm not playing with you.
I don't mind that. That's good from you.
Well, I used to have them at Safeway too when I was a kid. They were good. But they do have some of the top brands at Melbourne Marine Centre upstairs.
Is Lee going to be there? So we
no,
can
this
chew
is the issue. That was just, this was the selling point. We'll come if Lee's not there.
Well, I can make anything happen. I kind of need him here for those few days.
No, that's the thing, though. You literally go to the store. You're not just dealing with one of the boys that are mechanic. You're dealing with Lee, Jamie, the guys that actually fish and use these products. So take it away. Andrew, what was it again?
24th through to the 26th of March, we've got 25% off all fishing tackle upstairs.
Bang. We're looking forward to that. Andrew Stephen from Melbourne Marine, and that is Red's review for Club Marine for this week.
I'm giving it to him. He's done well. Put him on the spot twice. Andrew, Melbourne Marine Centre.
That was Red's review for Club Marine. Insure your boat or jet ski with Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance. Check the PDS to see if this insurance is right for you.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for Red's tip.
Fuses, Patrick. It's a must.
I like this.
It's a must.
Yep.
You can buy I'm going to call it a tackle box kit. Parts 4 in Ocean Grove, the joint's called, where I went. So any automotive place,
yep.
You can go in and buy a fuse kit.
And this is something that you should have anyway.
Oh, I think right? so. I think it's a massive thing to keep in the boat. Now, bilge pumps, they're designed that fuses go first before things blow.
Yep.
So I go through a fair few fuses. Like, I get line caught in the bilge, whatever it is. Well, let's be honest, we won't say line. Lots of line caught in the bilge, and it gets caught. Fuses pop, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing worse than not having...
Don't crack it over the fuse. Crack it over the fact that, hang on. No, this is meant to do this.
It's a good thing that it's happened. It's a great thing if your fuse blows. It means it's done its job.
Yes.
Don't do what I do, and if it's taking a 15 amp, I don't put a 40 in to avoid it like I do. But it's definitely something to have, I think, in the cabin of the boat. Store it away up the side. It's a little fuse kit. I think it cost me $30. I put one in your boat, and I've put one in my boat, and it will get you out of trouble. Say, for example, chasing tuna, blood all over the deck, and your deck hose goes, change the fuse, away you go, the mess is gone. Now time for the flying gaff.
It is time for the flying gaff, and I'm handing it back to you because we were talking during the week. We love following the cricket, but the gaff this week is heading to the Australian selectors because we can't, for the life of us, both you and I, understand how it has taken the last test in this one for Usman Khawaja to get back in the Australian side. When he comes back in, and he should have had 4 centuries. He has looked unbelievable.
My man, Uzi. I've always liked him as an opening batter. And nothing against Harris. I've actually met Harris in person. Lovely fella. Nothing personal.
Isn't it
Uzi
funny,
should have been there from the start, though. Harris.
Isn't it funny how in sports, sometimes these things just happen. And it's like, scoring well in the Sheffield Shield. Is it going to translate to Test cricket? And it just sort of
peters
along. And then they come back and you just forget how goddamn great they
Do you know what the best part about this whole thing was? Cameron White had a massive argument with him about Harris shouldn't be in the size Uzi should be, and he got stuck into me a bit. Harris is like the go, you reckons? Harris has now dropped. Uzi, like you said, nearly 500s. Cameron White, see you later.
Thanks for joining us in the show this morning. We hope you've enjoyed it. We will see you next week on the water for real adventures.